Delegating to Freelance Lawyers with Kristen Tyler, episode 114. Are you ready to make your law firm a profit-generating machine that will free up your time and skyrocket your impact? With more than two decades of business growth experience and having proven that you can be successful while prioritizing your family and your impact, introducing the Profit with Law podcast. I am your host, the creator of the Firm Differentiator 10X Effect, Moshe Amsel. Well, hello and welcome to another great interview episode of the Profit with Law podcast. I'm your host, Moshe Amsel, and today I have a special guest. Kristen Tyler is somebody who was introduced to me back in probably the Q3 of 2019 by our good friend Maddie Martin over at Smith AI. And we met because I was hosting the Law Firm Growth Summit. She's the co-founder of Law Clerk. And we got into a conversation about Law Clerk being a sponsor of the summit. They did sponsor the summit, and we really, really appreciate the support that we got from Law Clerk. But Kristen has turned into a fast friend and a absolutely amazing resource, a go-to resource that I refer lawyers to all the time. And it's really, I don't know why it took us this long to get her here onto the podcast, but she's here today. And I'm really excited to get into her story and the story behind Law Clerk and what Law Clerk does, because it is an invaluable tool to any growing law firm. One of the biggest challenges that we have is, oh my goodness, we are too big. You know, we're growing too fast. We have to bring somebody on, but yet we don't have enough work for a full-time person. And how are we going to navigate that balance between needing more help, but also not having enough to really insert somebody into the firm full time? Or if we need some specific expertise, how do we get that expertise without needing to make any sort of long-term commitment to somebody by bringing them in-house when it might just be for one specific client that's not going to be a repeatable thing? So I'm really excited to get into this conversation with Kristen. And let's see. Going to give you her official bio here. Kristen Tyler is a co-founder of Law Clerk, where attorneys go to hire freelance lawyers. She's also a partner at the law firm of Garman, Turner, Gordon, where she practices in trusts and estates. In addition to being a lawyer and entrepreneur, she's a proud mom and firm believer that the practice of law can be rewarding despite its daily demands. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Moshe. Thanks for having me. It is funny. We've talked so often and so many times. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess this is the first time I'm on the podcast, but I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
You're very welcome. So what I like to do when I have a new guest on the show is let's learn a little bit about you. So if you can give us just a bit of the backstory, how you got into law, and then how you got into Law Clerk, and maybe, navigating some of that while also, building and growing a family, and just paint the picture for us of what life was like for Kristen Tyler.
Sure. No challenge there to make that somewhat concise. Let's see. So I grew up in Nebraska in a really small town, and the reason I got into law, there's a lot of reasons I got into law. In high school, I didn't like the whole dissecting the frog thing in biology. So I quickly ruled out medical school. That was just disgusting. But I had at an early age, I connected with a woman who was the governor of Nebraska, and she was a huge role model for me. And at a very young age, I said, I wanted to be governor like her someday. And so everybody said, okay, well, if you're going to be the governor, you have to go to law school, I said, okay, I'll just go to law school then. That's fine. And for some reason that stuck with me. And even though I now have no interest in getting into politics in any shape or fashion, I still went to law school. There's a heck of a lot you can do with a law degree. And I'm glad I got that education. So yeah. So fast forward, after law school, I was in private practice focusing on trusts and estates. I still have that practice. I've got a good book of business where I've got some great relationships with clients. And I focus on maintaining those and servicing those right now, which is amazing. But in addition to that, about 5 years ago, I was at a pretty good sized regional law firm of about 60 lawyers based in the Southwest. So a bigger firm. And we were starting to see that that business model was not going to be sustainable long-term, a lot of overhead and that type of a firm business model. So we left there, opened our own firm, a smaller boutique firm with 9 partners. So still pretty good size compared to, you know, like a solo shop, but much smaller, much easier to control the overhead. And through that process of leaving the bigger firm, going to the smaller firm, we saw that we missed a few things. And this was around the same time that marketplaces like Airbnb and Uber were on the rise. And it got us thinking if there were ways through technology that we could solve the problems of the things we missed through technology. And that's how Law Clerk was born. So what were those things that we missed? What were the problems we were trying to solve? Well, there were twofold. Number one, you know, when we were at the bigger firm, we have a lot of different attorneys with different areas of expertise, and you can walk down the hall to, you know, pick their brain and get an immediate answer, which is so gratifying. You know, so for example, I'm interested in estates, but living and practicing in Las Vegas, Nevada, from time to time, I have gaming issues that come up. So, you know, let's say I have an estate plan client who owns a convenience store, happens to have a gaming license, and we're trying to plan for that business to go down to the next generation of the family. You know, there's questions about how do we do that with the gaming license. So I'd walk down the hall, talk to the gaming partner, get a plan of action right away. So to be able to immediately tap into subject matter expertise like that was so helpful. Just, I love being able to do that at the bigger firm. So subject matter expertise is number one. Number two was, sometimes you just need to have more lawyers on your team. Let's say you're gearing up for trial. And when you're gearing up for trial, you know, depending on the type of case, type of trial, it can be really intense. And you just need a lot of lawyers that are available to do a lot of work very quickly. You know, maybe you're getting hit with, you need to write motions in limine and respond to motions in limine and prep trial binders and summarize deposition transcripts, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of work that goes in at the last minute when you realize, oh, we're not going to settle. We're really going to trial. And so that was something else we missed, was the ability to staff up temporarily with more lawyers available to just crank out work for those time periods where you need more help. And so out of that, you know, missing the subject matter expertise and missing the ability to quickly staff up temporarily, we need help. We came up with Law Clerk, and that launched in January of 2018. And I've spent the last 2.5 years traveling to a gazillion, sorry, my voice is breaking, a gazillion legal conferences and CLEs, meeting a ton of amazing lawyers and helping, you know, educate them about Law Clerk and outsourcing. And that's how I met Maddie, which is how I met you. So there's the story. Hopefully that wasn't too long and rambly.
No, not at all. I think it's wonderful. And, you know, you said that early on you wanted to be the governor of Nebraska, and now you have no interest in getting into politics. But no. I think that the reason you wanted to be the governor of Nebraska probably had nothing to do with politics, and probably had everything to do with maybe helping people, effectuating change, being able to change the world in some way, shape, or form.
And absolutely.
So yes, I think that you probably are doing that right now.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
You don't need to be a governor to do that.
No.
So, and that's something I'm really passionate about, is that, you know, every law firm owner has the ability to effectuate change in a big way. And sometimes when you're a solo, when you're really small, it's hard to foresee how you can have any sort of massive impact. But we just finished up a major promotion that we were running, trying to really sell the idea of information products to law firms, where you can sell your knowledge and expertise in a packaged information product to educate the market and to teach people how to navigate the system and to teach people how to resolve their issue, even if it's through non-legal routes. Because, you know, going to a lawyer and getting served by a lawyer in that legal process is not always the best solution. And if that's the only thing we offer, then we're really limiting how we can help the world and how we can make change. And then there's other, you know, when you really get involved in a very specific niche, there are ways to become the voice for that area. For example, I've had a client of mine who became one of the top activists in the women rights stuff going on recently. You know, she was the front runner against Harvey Weinstein. She started out with a practice that, you know, helps people fight rage porn, which is weird, like, you know, niche thing that you would never even think of. But when you get that niche and you become known for the best law firm to do that, suddenly it starts to move everything in that direction, you know, and that gave her a seat to have a platform to be able to effectuate change where she was passionate about. So I think that we all have the ability to do that. And the first step is to recognize that that's something that we can do and then take action, do something about it. So you launched Law Clerk in January of 2018, and I'm sure it's been quite the ride. We're now just a little over 2 years later.
Yes.
What does it look like now? I'm sure you had a lot of pain and growing points, you know, through there. But it probably looks a lot different than it did back in January of 2018.
That's for sure. We've been blessed to see very fast growth. We have been doing everything we can to push the needle on educating, like you always talk about, educating lawyers to bring the idea of outsourcing work to other freelance lawyers, bring that more mainstream, make that a part of the law firm business model. And there's a lot of jokes about how law firms are slow to change and slow to embrace technology. And boy, has that theory been put to the test in the last 3-4 months with COVID and this whirlwind that has surrounded the law and really prodded lawyers and law firms and courts into the 21st century to embrace technology in a way that we've never seen before. So it's definitely been a wild ride excited to see where we go in the next 6 months, the next year. That's for sure.
That's awesome and amazing. So let's talk about freelance lawyers and let's talk about how that works and what how somebody can think about that when it comes to viewing it in their practice. And I can tell you, we run a program called the Law Firm Growth Incubator. The incubator is a monthly membership for, it's intended for smaller law firms who are in the 0 to 250K revenue range. But once you're in there, you might stick around if you get bigger than that, because what it is, I'm sure you know these names, but Mark Homer and Melanie Leonard, Mark Homer from GNGF, Melanie Leonard from Streamline Legal, and myself have collaborated to create this incubator. And every week we have a live call where we discuss marketing, the business and financial aspects of the firm, and technology. So that's our three areas of expertise between the three of us. And we have a call every single week. The fourth call is either a guest expert or a Q&A in supporting law firms through this process. And one of the questions that comes up a lot is, I need help. You know, right. I'm a true solo. I need help. And I don't know where to start. I don't know, you know, how to get that help. And we definitely start talking about this conversation of where, you know, what are the options for help? And the first thing that you think is, oh, I need to hire somebody. And the first thing that you think is, oh, I need to hire another attorney, because you view yourself as the attorney. So if I need to free up my time, then I need to bring another attorney to do that work. And the reality is that that's the worst place to start, is by hiring another attorney, because there's so many other tasks that you're doing that are not necessarily need to be on your plate, where you can hold on to that attorney role. And even then, why do you have to go and hire a full-time attorney? You can bring in somebody to moonlight with you, to fill in the gaps, to take that overload from you. So how does somebody know, hey, I need help. I need another lawyer to do this work. So that's the first thing, is it can't be done by somebody else. It has to be a lawyer. And then what is a freelance lawyer? What are the risks of taking a freelance lawyer on? What do I need to be careful about? And why is it like a beautiful thing? What are the benefits of working with a freelance lawyer?
Sure. A lot of good stuff there. So I think that, identifying the fact that you're at the point that you need help to continue growing is step one. And I talk about this a lot, where at the end of the day, if you're a true solo, which is what we market, by the way, so don't think law clerks some resource for big law. It's not. We are meant for solo attorneys and small firms. That is the core of the lawyers that we work with. But if you're a true solo, when you start your firm, you do everything, and you kind of should. Like, that's fine. Like, you probably answer the phone, and you're planning the marketing, and you're writing the motions, and you meet with the clients, and you go to court. You're doing everything. But that's only sustainable for a certain amount of time if you keep growing and if you want to grow. So if you want to grow, then you're going to reach a point where you need to stop doing all the things. And that can be hard for people that have always done all the things. But once you hit that point, you have to get into the mindset of, okay, what are the things that I can let go of, delegate, outsource? What are the core things I want to keep? So for a lot of lawyers that I talk to, yes, absolutely, they can outsource and delegate the administrative tasks, whether that's to, again, some sort of a freelance partner that they can work with, some virtual, or, is it a full-time hire? That's going to vary. But, those tasks are easy ones to get your feet wet with outsourcing and delegating. What gets a little bit harder is the substantive legal work. I meet so many lawyers that say, well, the client hired me to do this work, so I have to still do all this work, even though maybe they've got so much work that they're, pulling an all-nighter three nights a week and, not sleeping, not eating right, not exercising. Like, that's a recipe for burnout. And so if you've got, if you're getting buried by the substantive legal work, that's the time to think about, well, does it make sense to hire someone in a traditional associate way? Does it make sense to try outsourcing? With the traditional hire, that can be pretty daunting for a lot of lawyers. I know lawyers that put off getting help for years because they're scared to hire an associate. They don't want the responsibility of having to keep payroll going even if business slows down. They, they're hesitant to want to train up a younger lawyer as their associate for fear that they'll leave them and become a competitor in a few years. But the really amazing thing is that there's so many legal tasks, substantive legal tasks, that you can outsource to a freelance lawyer that will free up your time and allow you to still do the core work that your client did hire you to do. The client hired you to be the person sitting next to them at the court hearings, to be there at the depositions, to be there at the settlement negotiations, the mediations, whatever. They hired you for those things. They didn't necessarily in their mind think that they were the ones hiring you or that you would be the one doing the hours of legal research or the one pouring through the piles of discovery documents and getting those organized and analyzed. So there's a lot of time consuming, more administrative type tasks on the substance of legal work that you can still outsource: research, discovery, drafting documents. And by, especially drafting documents, that can free up hours and hours for a lawyer that they can, and then spend those hours, cultivating new clients, being the one in court or at the deposition, et cetera. So you're still doing those core tasks that the client did hire you to do, but you're freeing up a lot of your other time to focus on tasks that are a better use of your energy, or, to get your life back and sleep a few nights a week. So, that's kind of the initial analysis into, am I ready to hire? What kind of help do I need? Am I better to hire someone? Well, maybe we should get into that a little bit more. Do I hire someone full-time or the outsourced option? Because there's a lot of benefits there. Any questions, Moshe? I feel like I'm just going and going here, but
yeah,
happy to keep going.
I definitely would love to get into that conversation of full-time versus outsource. I think that's a really important discussion to have. And but one thing that you said really it raised a flag to me that I want to look for opportunities to talk about this because it comes up a lot. I had it on another interview as well, and that is solos. And this podcast is not just for solos, so I want to make sure that we're not just talking about solos, but this happens most with solos, but it can also happen when you're a small firm where you think that a client hired you and therefore you can't have somebody else do the work because they're looking for me to do it. And you know, you painted this picture where you're the one in the at the front when, you know, when going to court or interacting with the client, that it has to be you. But on the back, when it's drafting and research and all of that, it could be somebody else and they don't care. And I want to challenge that to say, you shouldn't care whether they care or not. You have to educate your client that an attorney that you hire is going to be somebody that you carefully vetted and is going to be somebody that is just as good or better than you. And you cannot grow your firm if you think that people are only going to come to you if it's you doing the work. And that is a place that a ton of solos get stuck in their head and thinking that this is the end for me. Like, this is the most I could do because people are coming to me because they want me and therefore it can't be somebody else. And granted, if you're a criminal law attorney and you have some really good cases under your belt, that somebody is going to want you to represent them in a murder trial, right? Because they want to go free, right?
Right.
But at the same time, if you look at the lawyers who have that track record and have grown big practices, people still go to the practice because you're running it, because you're still pulling the strings at the top end. And your job is to manage that case. Your job is to make sure that your attorney is not misstepping, that things are being done exactly the way that you would have done them. But you educate the client that this is my law firm and any lawyer who works here is going to be representing you the same way as if it was me doing it. And it's hard to, when you think about it, when you're a solo, you don't really think about having that kind of conversation with your client because you don't anticipate that this might change during this engagement. But it is something to really get, if you wrap your head around it, get into the practice of doing that, even when you're just a solo, because you never know when you're going to be ready to bring that help on. And then you're going to be, oh, I can't do it because I already promised that it's going to be only me. And, you know, and we kind of think like that's our selling point. You know, don't go to that firm because there's, you know, there you're just going to get a faceless, nameless attorney, and come here where you know that you're getting the owner of the firm and I'm going to be doing all the work for you. And although I think that might be a good selling point, at the same time, I think that you can do that with a twist where you're still setting yourself up for the ability to grow. So I don't want to focus on this too much, but I wanted to just to mention that because it is definitely a place where people get stuck in their growth. And it's important to start to think about that in a different way.
You know, one good practice related to that we do in our law firm is, in order to make sure that we very clearly have the ability to staff the case the way we think is best on every single case. And our engagement agreement, the engagement agreement says, you know, attorney Tyler will be your primary attorney handling this case, but she has authority to use her discretion to collaborate with other team members, including legal assistants, paralegals, associate attorneys, and even, you know, freelance lawyers to work various components of the case and move it through the progression. So, I mean, if you're worried about wanting to be upfront with your client about getting the help you need to properly staff the case and work it to the best ability, you can even put that language in your engagement agreement. That way it's crystal clear in writing. The client, you know, assuming the client reads the agreement before they sign it, they know that you have that discretion to delegate and have different team members, whether they're full-time on staff or they're virtual freelancers, you know, come in and help with various parts of the case. So that's just a good practice I like to throw out there, is add language into your engagement agreement. And if anyone listening wants to know what that language is that we use, I'm happy to share it. So,
yeah, I love that idea. But at the same time, I'm also going to really, I mean, I know who my listener base is. You're all attorneys. Uh-huh. This is a very typical attorney thing to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to box you all into a box, but it's a very typical attorney thing to do, to put in the engagement agreement and say, okay, it's there. I've communicated it. And that's the only place you communicate it. People don't read them. They should, but if they're not an attorney client, right, they're, you know, many of them are not reading the fine print. So mm-hmm. don't assume that because you include it in your engagement agreement, that therefore they know about it. You have to communicate it in real plain English too in the process. So I think having both of those is the 1-2 punch that you need. So for definitely, sure, you know, putting in the agreement is that's where you go when there's somebody asking questions later and you say, not only did I tell you about this, but I even put it in the agreement and you signed it, right? So that's the cover your ass part of it. But the making my client a happy client, that requires verbal upfront communication to really educate them on what to expect. So I think you need both. But I love that idea of just making sure that it's everywhere, so that this way there's no question. All right, let's talk about this difference between hiring a full-time or part-time associate, sure, versus going to a freelance lawyer. Set the stage for me on what does that look like, and what are the benefits of going freelance versus, you know, bringing somebody in-house?
Sure. Well, one of the top benefits is, of course, going to be overhead savings. Okay, if you're trying to stay lean, adding a traditional full-time associate is a really major addition to your monthly bottom line. You've got their salary, insurance, benefits. Not to consider that if you're still working in a bricks and mortar type office space, you need to have space for them, equipment for them, et cetera, et cetera. So it can be a major undertaking to add on that traditional hire with all the overhead that comes with them. Now, you know, there can be some benefit too. I mean, if you're at the point that you're spending days and hours in court, you know, you can hire appearance counsel in some markets, but it's not widely available nationwide. So if you need help with making appearances, you may have no choice other than to hire someone on a part-time or full-time basis to help with those court appearances, because that work requires them to engage in the practice of law. They need to be, you know, physically present, licensed in that jurisdiction, et cetera. But if you like to do those types of things, like we've been talking about, you like to be the one in court for your client, et cetera, then there's a lot of work that you can free up, like the written work, via the use of freelance lawyers. So the things we've experienced in our own law firm, the things I hear from lawyers nationwide, is that it's scary to hire that full-time hire. It's expensive. And that all too often that hire, you know, stays with you for 2, maybe 3 years and then leaves all of a sudden, after you've trained them and you've spent time teaching them your magic ways of practicing law, and they become a competitor. And I've talked to lawyers that just, it becomes a cycle of hire a new associate, train them, they leave, become competitor, hire a new, you know, it's just over and over again. And so with a, you know, working with a freelance lawyer, you don't have that same risk. You know, I find that freelance lawyers typically want to just focus on the legal work, the written work. They don't want to manage a practice. They don't want to be dealing with clients or going to court. They just want to do that support work in the background because that's what they do best. And so that's a huge advantage. Now, another thing that I hear from people is, well, you know, how do I develop some efficiencies and rapport with working with a freelance lawyer? And the great thing is that if you find someone that you work well with, that does good work and that your working styles mesh well together, you know, you can go back to them on repeat. You know, at Law Clerk, we've built a feature called Teams that allows the hiring attorney to essentially favorite and add their top freelancers to a team. And they can have different teams for different types of law, different types of work. And it allows you to go back to your top freelancers time and again for repeat types of work. And so in that regard, you basically have a virtual associate that you can really develop a lot of efficiencies. And it's kind of cool. We see on a growing basis, we see attorneys that come into the site and they're posting new projects, new pieces of work to a freelancer. And it just, the totality of the instruction for the project is, you know, do it the same as last time or do it the same as the Jones case. Because they've worked together on so many matters now, they've really gotten to know each other and the instructions can be that short and to the point, which is kind of cool. But we're meeting lawyers all across the country that, you know, in the past have hired the traditional associate, been burned by it so many times that now that they've discovered working with the virtual freelance lawyer as an option, they're actually building that into their business model, never intend to hire a full-time associate again. So, you know, for some lawyers, it's becoming a full replacement in their business model, which is exciting. For other lawyers, you know, working with a freelance lawyer can be a good way for you to test out if you're really ready to make a full-time hire. You know, it can be a way for you to scale up, to get yourself through those times where maybe you're burning the midnight oil, you're super busy, but you're hesitant for whatever reason to hire someone full-time. We see that a lot too, where lawyers will work with us for a number of months. They discover, okay, I really am busy enough to justify having someone full-time on my team. And for various reasons, they want to make the traditional hire of someone in the office. Great. This is a way for you to test it out, a test run with freelance lawyers, to find out for yourself if you're ready to make that hire and what types of work you're going to be giving that lawyer. You know, proving to yourself that maybe the work's not going to dry up. I think that's another fear a lot of lawyers carry that holds them back from hiring, is they worry that the work's going to suddenly dry up when they hire someone to help. And so whether we're, you know, a tool for you to scale and grow to the eventual full-time hire, great, or whether we become a part of your ongoing business model to incorporate virtual freelance lawyers, I think either way, we can really be a big help to lawyers who are looking to grow and not lose their sanity along the way.
Yeah, I love that. The way that you described that, because by working with a freelance lawyer and going into it, not really knowing exactly what work you're going to give them, what you're going to hold on to, how are you going to instruct them to do their work, and going through that process with a freelance lawyer and really honing that in and getting clear about it is going to make you so much better in of a HR director when you go to hire somebody to select the right candidate and then onboard them properly. Like, one of the biggest problems when people hire somebody is they don't have a clear plan of exactly what am I going to give them and how am I going to give it to them and right? How are they going to know what to do and what are the processes they're going to follow. This kind of forces you to create all of that. And now you've got all that ready. So when you actually hire somebody in-house, you're good to go with really being clear on what that person is doing, what the responsibilities are going to be, and where it's all going to work out. And the proof that you have enough work to give that person, you know, to go on. So I love that way of looking at it. Something you said earlier, you mentioned virtual freelance lawyer. And that got me thinking, well, is this for like, is my market for who I'm looking for now, like nationwide, or am I typically when I'm looking for a freelancer, is it somebody that's local to me, that's going to come into my office and I'm going to meet with and in person, and they're going to potentially go to court for me, or is this usually just, hey, there's somebody who's, you know, working from home, they've got the expertise and I'm just going to send them stuff remotely and they're going to do it and send it back.
Right. Well, you know, the whole idea of outsourcing work, especially written work, to another lawyer is really nothing new. For decades, we've called that a contract lawyer. And so you have, you know, busy lawyer who from time to time would hire a quote unquote contract lawyer, generally from their local community, to come in and help with things like writing big motions or briefs, et cetera. And so lawyers have done that for decades. There's nothing really new about this. But the exciting thing is that thanks to technology, we are able to connect people from different geographic locations that probably would have never found each other to collaborate on work, but for the invention of the internet. So, you know, that opens the doors to now where, you know, for example, we had a user early on who is actually, I think he's in his 70s. He's been practicing for decades. He's got a great team. They've all worked together for upwards of over 20 years at minimum. And they have a nationally renowned practice focused on criminal defense and constitutional law. They were preparing a writ to the U.S. Supreme Court, and their team's written a ton of writs. So this is nothing new to them. They don't need help with the nuances of that writ. But they got stuck on one argument within the writ where they really needed to find someone with a detailed expertise in that area. And I'm trying to remember what it was, but it's been a couple of years now, so I don't remember. Anyways, through our network, they were able to collaborate with a freelance lawyer in a different time zone who had actually researched and written on this issue extensively, both in law school and afterwards, probably as close to a national expert on, I remember what it was, stare decisis. Don't ask me to define what that is. I don't know. It's something with evidence in constitutional law. So they found this expert who's written extensively on stare decisis to come in and just help them further research and brief that one small part of the overall writ to help boost their case. And, you know, again, I don't know how a lawyer in one city would possibly find someone with that deep level of expertise in a totally different city and collaborate for a piece of work like that without technology. And, you know, because the hiring attorney is, yeah, they're barred in one state and they're overseeing the work, you can hire a freelance lawyer from another state who isn't barred in your jurisdiction because you are still supervising and overseeing their work. When they're helping you with things like discovery, drafting documents, organizing, research, you know, that work does not cause them to engage in the practice of law because they're not talking directly to the client. They're not, you know, arguing to the court or taking depositions. So when they're doing that work that falls into the category of, you know, a paraprofessional, that opens the door so that you can collaborate with a freelance lawyer from a different jurisdiction who has a deep level of knowledge and expertise on a specific issue because they're not engaging in the practice of law. They're reporting to you, you're supervising their work, and you're the one still engaged in the practice of law. And so that's really exciting to me because it opens the doors across the whole country for people to be able to collaborate and get the help they need to boost their clients' cases and to do it in a very affordable way that doesn't drive up the cost of legal services.
Yeah, so it sounds like you can have both of them. It really depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for something with specific expertise, you can search nationwide for that. If you're looking for somebody with the ability to handle just excess work that you have, then you can you can look more in your local market for somebody who's available to do that.
Yeah.
Now, how do you navigate practice management software, you know, technology systems that you need the attorney to plug into where it's different from firm to firm? Like, do you have to limit your search to an associate who's familiar with, you know, let's say Clio or Practice Panther or my case or whatever, you know, it is that you're using? Or is there some training or recommendation that you, that law clerk provides to a hiring attorney that this is, you know, hey, this is how you should have your freelance attorney work within your system in order to make this as smooth a process as possible?
Sure, that's a great question. Well, because the different systems and programs work differently from firm to firm, you know, it obviously would be impossible for a freelancer to know all of them, to quickly work efficiently in all of them. And so what we've done is actually combine the best features of those different platforms into our own site to make it easier for the attorney and the freelancer to collaborate and work together. So for example, built into our site, we have a document repository, so which does sync with a number of different things where you can pull documents in that the freelancer needs to review, read through before they write their document. They write their document, it goes back into that document repository. So we handle managing documents. We handle secure communication. So we provide a lot of options for the attorney and the freelancer to communicate either through the platform or off the platform. We have built in timekeeping. So there's a mechanism so that when the freelancer is doing the work for you, they are required to input and keep track of their time on the project for a number of reasons. Number one, yeah, most attorneys still are doing their work on the billable hour. And so they need that data in order to charge the freelancer's time back to their client. But for attorneys who maybe do work on a flat fee or some sort of alternative fee method, it also is good for them to get that data so they know if they're pricing those flat fees accordingly, if appropriately. And so we have built-in timekeeping. We also have a really robust built-in conflict check system to help prevent a freelancer from doing work, you know, pro client Acme Corp one day for one attorney and then be adverse to them on a different matter later on. So we've got a built-in robust conflict check system that helps manage that. So, you know, and by and large, the attorneys that we talk to don't want the freelancer to be that integrated into their firm where they have their own login to different platforms and tools. You know, they really want to have control and limits on what the freelancer is doing. That gives them, you know, the sense of still maintaining the driver's seat, calling all the shots on the case, being the one supervising the work, gives them a lot of peace of mind that they're not letting go of too much control when they're delegating that work to the freelance lawyer. And so those, that seems to be a good combination of, you know, enabling the freelance lawyer to do their best work they can with the tools they need, but still limiting the amount of deep expertise and knowledge that they could possibly get from the firm they're working for. So hopefully that makes sense, but it really is a pretty streamlined system that allows them to work together for the project at hand and no more.
It sounds like you're more than just a company that marries the freelance lawyer to the hiring firm. You know, it sounds like you're more than a match.com for lawyers.
Yes.
And you're actually a technology ecosystem for managing that relationship. And I did not know that. So that's really insightful.
Good. We're definitely much more. Much more than the matchmaker. We really strive to provide the tools that that both sides need to make the working relationship fast and efficient.
That's amazing. Now, let me ask you this. We have started to attract an international audience to this podcast. Is this specifically a U.S.-based company? Are the attorneys all U.S. attorneys, or have you seen the footprint grow beyond that?
So as of right now, we only operate in the U.S. and U.S. licensed attorneys. Now, some of our freelancers who are U.S. licensed attorneys do live overseas for a variety of reasons, you know, military spouses, people working for different nonprofit or government organizations who still want to moonlight and make some extra money. But as of right now, it's all U.S. licensed attorneys. You know, one of our top freelancers is actually a guy, a really cool guy from California, who now lives and freelances from Costa Rica. So, you know, he's living the dream. I think he lives right by, a volcano or something, and he has a view of the water. I mean, it's like literally living the dream. But we get interest in our platform from attorneys, get a lot of interest from Canada, other states, so, or other countries. So it's going to grow. But, you know, keep in mind, we're still 2.5 years in. There's a lot of lawyers in the U.S. still that we want to help. And so our efforts remain focused just on the U.S.-based work for now.
What does the growth roadmap for Law Clerk look like? What can we expect to see on the horizon as far as changes and increases in what you already do? I have no idea what the requests you're getting are. So it'd be interesting to get some of that insight of, you know, what are you adding and improving, you know, currently?
Sure. Well, I think the next big one that we hope to get in place, and I don't have a time frame for right now, but one feature I would love to see is the creation of an app. Right now we are web-based. You log into your portal. And I know a lot of people do that from their phone through the, you know, the whatever browser function is on your phone. But I would like to see an app developed, because when you think about our day-to-day life, we're very app-based, and we live our lives based on a whole bunch of different apps pieced together. So I would like to see that. That's on the roadmap, and I don't have a time frame for it right now. But, you know, the biggest thing in the last 6 months that we've been focused on has been building up our customer service function. So customer service has been key since day one. You know, we know that lawyers have enough problems you're dealing with your clients, your practice on a day-to-day basis. We didn't want Law Clerk to ever be a hurdle or an impediment to getting your work done. And one way that we have really tried to next level that component of our business is by building up our advisor service. So every time an attorney registers for an account with law clerk, they are matched up with what we call a dedicated law clerk advisor. Really, we should call them a concierge because they're a white glove concierge service. This is an advisor that the hiring attorney works hand in hand with throughout various stages of their relationship with us, their relationship with different freelancers. So let's say we have a new attorney that comes on, they get onboarded. The advisor can help answer questions about the functionality of the site. The advisor can help guide them through the process of posting their first project, picking the right freelancer to work with. The advisor can also help with, you know, pricing projects and making sure that they're priced appropriately. They can help resolve any communication problems that maybe happen, et cetera, et cetera. And so allowing each attorney that comes on board to work directly with this advisor. Keep in mind the advisors each have a book of business, for lack of a better phrase, of several hundred lawyers. So they're working with lawyers all over the country who are already using law clerk and succeeding with it. They can tap into that knowledge of how other lawyers are using it and succeeding to help you use it and succeed with it. And so that's really been a huge boost to the attorneys we work with for them to draw on that knowledge base and find new and different ways to use the freelance lawyers and to do it successfully thanks to our advisor program. And so, you know, the advisors are in no way any cool piece of technology. They're people. They work hand in hand with you. And we're really proud of this advisor program and the way it's helping other lawyers get out of their own way and find new and creative ways to delegate with freelance lawyers. So, and you know, the right now we're still focused on building that up, continuing to expand the advisor program long-term, hoping next phase, I think would be the creation of an app finally. So those are a couple things that are on our minds.
Yeah. I love the app idea. I imagine that would allow me to get notifications on my phone when a job that meets certain criteria is posted.
Exactly.
So that I can, instead of me needing to actively go in and search for work, I could see that something was posted. It'll be, my response will be much quicker, as a freelance lawyer.
Right.
And that would probably improve the process for the hiring, firms where that
it'll
increase the speed of how quickly they can get matched with somebody that's a good fit for them.
We also think that it will help with communication during when work's in progress.
Oh, yes.
So there's no delays. They can just immediately essentially text back and answer questions or get the information they need to keep the work moving forward. So we're excited about that. But again, I probably shouldn't have even mentioned it because I don't have a launch date for that by any means, but it's the front of our minds. Hey, top of my wish list.
There you go. Well, you know what? If it's something that you're working on, then it will happen. So yes, there's nothing, yes. There's no harm in mentioning it because I think that ultimately we want to know what's available. And now everyone who's listening to this knows, hey, Law Clerk has this amazing stuff and it doesn't have an app yet. Done. You know, like I already know that they're working on it. I don't need to ask support about it. I don't need to question, hey, there's no app yet. We've already covered that. Okay. I'm looking at your website, How Law Clerk Works. Mm-hmm. And it says post a confidential project, set a flat fee, lawyers apply, select applicant and conflicts cleared, share documents and communicate securely. One question that I have is set a flat fee. Describe to me how that works, the fee structure, and also who pays for this? How does Law Clerk make money?
My dog was having a little moment there. So I think he saw a bird fly in the backyard. Sorry about that. Flat fees. Okay. So flat fees, I think a lot of lawyers get to that point and that might be where we lose them because they're so ingrained with the billable hour and that's so how they usually work. So let's talk about that because we have lawyers on our site that do still bill their clients on a billable hour basis that still do their project work through us flat fee basis. So it can work either way. Let's say you have a criminal defense attorney and they need a motion to compel some evidence or a motion to suppress some evidence, whatever it may be. And they don't have time to write that. They want to outsource that to a freelance lawyer. So they, you know, my advice to them is if you have a motion like that, where chances are the lawyer has probably written hundreds of these motions themselves over the course of their career, they have a pretty good instinct as to about how long that'll take. So maybe they think it's 4 to 5 hours of work. Okay. So our guidance to them is that we are seeing attorneys pay freelance lawyers somewhere between $75 and $200 an hour or more, depending on the type of work, how quickly they need it, how complicated the work is. So let's say this motion to compel evidence, you know, you think is a pretty good mid-level piece of work. So maybe you would be willing to pay a freelancer $100 an hour to write it. Okay. If you think it's 4 to 5 hours of work, that's $400 to $500 flat fee. You know, if you need this in 2 days, pay a little bit more. If you're giving them 10 days to write it, maybe you pay a little bit less. So these are all factors that go into setting that flat fee. And again, I really want to emphasize that if this is the thing holding you back, talk to your law clerk advisor, because they're going to help guide you through this and help you find the right fee to set. You know, they can also search our database of projects to see what other attorneys are paying for similar types of work. So that's option one, is you ballpark about how many hours, and then you decide on, you know, paying the freelancer what you think is a reasonable hourly rate to base that flat fee on. Now, keep in mind, the alternative to this is if you were paying pure hourly, if you, you know, met up with a freelance lawyer and you agree for them to do work, you know, you have no control over how many hours they're going to work. And we hear this time and time again from people where, yeah, you know, I used to hire this contract lawyer in my community to write motions for me. The last one, it came back and they told me that they billed 30 hours. And I thought it was going to be like 8 to 10 hours, you know, so they get these huge bills. And that doesn't leave a good taste in either person's mouth when it's just way outside the scope of expectations of what was going to be the cost for the work. And we also hear about a lot of freelance lawyers who get stiffed in that scenario. I hear that story almost every week of freelance lawyers who really like to do their work now through law clerk because they have the security and peace of mind that they're going to get paid for their work. They don't get stiffed by the lawyers anymore. And I know that's terrible to say, but it happens a lot. So it gives both sides, the hiring attorney and the freelancer, more control and peace of mind that the work's going to get done and that they're going to get paid for the work. So that's great. Now the flip side to that, okay, still on this hourly billing model, criminal defense lawyer, you hire a freelance lawyer to write this motion to compel for you. You pay them $500 flat fee. Okay, let's say you pay $500 flat fee. As I mentioned earlier, our site does still require them to track the time they spent working on the matter and to submit a time card to you of how much time they worked on that. So maybe you pay them $500 and for whatever reason, it takes them quite a bit more time. It takes them maybe 7.5 hours, okay? Now, if you are billing your client on an hourly basis, the ethics rules, ethics opinions, everything, case law, all say that an attorney can bill a freelance lawyer's time back to their client at a reasonable market rate. So the key there is a reasonable market rate. So let's say that for this criminal defense attorney who hired the freelancer for the motion, you know, the freelancer works 7.5 hours. They determine that a reasonable market rate is $180 an hour. So they would bill the client $1,350. Okay. That would be what the hourly bill would be to the client. Now they paid the freelancer $500. That means that the hiring attorney still brought an additional $850 of revenue into their firm in that example. So that's a pretty powerful example to show how a solo attorney or a small firm, a medium firm, any size firm, can leverage the time and talent of a freelance lawyer to not only get more work done, but to make money on it. And that can be a real game changer when it comes to growth and hitting those revenue goals that you may have. Now, you know, this is something that big law with, you know, their business model, they've been doing this for decades. So it's nothing new. Big law does this with their, you know, just fleets of associate attorneys where they're paying them one salary, they bill them out at a different, you know, the profit goes into the firm. So it's, again, nothing revolutionary here. Lawyers and law firms have been doing this for decades. We're just finding a way to make it more accessible for smaller firms to get this type of help and bring more revenue into their firms.
And I could see how this could be really beneficial for somebody who's in a high-priced area, and then they find an associate that's in a low-priced area.
Exactly.
So I'm in the New York area. Mm-hmm. Here, you know, I'm listening to the price examples you're giving and I'm laughing because
it's nothing.
Can't find an attorney for $185 an hour. So, you know, if the reasonable market rate is $350 and you're able to bill $350, and then you can find an attorney out in, I don't know, whatever, in a place where that, you know, they'd be very happy to walk away with $75 an hour. Then there's a much bigger spread and more profitability availability. And I think that in your example where the associate ends up, you know, working more time than you anticipated, and it's a flat fee. Do you find that the hiring firm turns around and says, hey, we thought this would take 5 hours. It took longer. We're benefiting because we're billing by the hour. We're going to send you another $100, or we're going to, you know, does that ever happen?
It does. It does. And the way our system has worked is, yeah, the work is done on a flat fee. The way it works, you can always increase the fee. You can't decrease it. And so we do have a lot of people that when they get that work product, either it took the attorney more hours, or maybe they added a second phase to the work. You know, they discovered a whole different issue that needed to be addressed in the document, or they were just so blown away and happy with the work product that they want to give, you know, a bonus, an extra fee. And so we do get that. Or there's several different ways we can address that, increase the fee. And we have a lot of lawyers too. You know, if this whole flat fee thing is really throwing you off, we tell lawyers, hey, be really upfront when you post the project and say that you're posting it at this fee based on you thinking it's going to take no more than 10 hours to complete. And you could say that if it takes them more than 10 hours to complete, you're willing to discuss an additional fee. You don't have to commit to it, but say that you're open to that if it goes drastically beyond that time period. So there is some flexibility within this world of flat fees. So I don't want that to scare anybody off from giving us a try.
Right. Now you mentioned that you can't decrease the price, and I could see a scenario where you assume it's going to take 5 hours. It ends up taking them 2 hours. Yep. Now you can't turn around and bill the client 5 hours if it only took 2 hours. So you could potentially be losing money on that particular amount, that body of work, because you can't bill enough to cover your expense.
Your ethics rules, and these vary from state to state. If you wanted to just put it through as a straight expense on the bill to the client, you know, that's another factor. But the flip side is, if it's taken someone only 2 hours and you thought it was going to take them five, they obviously must have a deeper level of experience and expertise. Maybe, you know, maybe the hiring attorney in that example is a 7 or 8 year attorney, and this freelancer has been practicing 20 years. Well, maybe in that situation, it's, you know, entirely permissible that you might end up paying that freelancer who's 20 years experience at a higher hourly rate than what your rate is, even because their level of expertise and experience commands it, and it would be reasonable. So lots of different options there for ways to figure that out. We don't see that happen too often though.
Right. Obviously you'd have to have the ability to charge that increased hourly rate to your client in your agreement.
Exactly.
You can't just come up with a new rate on the fly and expect them to pay it.
Yes.
All right. Very interesting. So my other question that I asked you before, I'm going to circle back to it, is who's paying for the service? Like how exactly does law clerk collect their fee? Is it the hiring attorney? Is it the freelancer? Is it both? Is it built in? Like, how does that work?
It's built in. So let's say you have an attorney who's going to pay $1,000 for a freelancer to write a motion. We take a commission out of that. The net amount goes to the freelancer, and they see that up front. So it's very straightforward. Our commission is 28%, which within the world of marketplaces and commissions is, believe it or not, a little bit on the lower side. You know, Uber charges upwards of 40 to 50% on a lot of their rides. Granted, our people have a much deeper expertise. But yeah, so our 28% comes out of that flat fee. The only thing the hiring attorney pays is that flat fee. We handle all of the payment processing fees. We also do the tax reporting. So if you're, you know, based on the amount of work you've sent to a freelance lawyer, if you would otherwise be required to send them a 1099 for taxes in January of the following year, we do that for you. The 1099 comes from a law clerk. So you pay a law clerk, we pay the freelancer, we handle the tax reporting and all the payment processing fees.
And I imagine that you have to pay law clerk up front, which is why nobody gets stiffed, right? So when the job gets taken, that's when you're paying law clerk. Law clerk holds on to that money. Job's completed. You turn around and pay the freelance attorney.
Exactly. You nailed it. So.
Okay. So knowing that law clerk's going to take that percentage, does that change how the hiring attorney should approach the calculation of what they're going to pay for the job? In other words, it obviously, if I list a job at $500, I now need to say, okay, the attorney who's taking the job is only going to net $360. Maybe that's way below the rate that's the market rate. Do I need to increase that flat fee in order to find somebody for that?
Some people do calculate it in. And so if they, really want the net amount to be a certain amount of dollars for the freelancer, they'll then build in our fee on top of that. And that's fine. But most attorneys, I don't think do that. We see both approaches. the non-legal answer you were hoping to get.
Right. And I guess folks, the thing here is it doesn't hurt to try. You can always, if you can't find somebody, you can always increase how much you're willing to pay.
You can always increase it and you can always cancel it. So, that's another great feature is that if you post a project, you don't find someone who you're confident you want to hire, just cancel it. No fee. Test it out. See if you find someone. If you do, great. If you need to cancel it, then fine. So yeah,
that's one thing that I love is that you can post jobs for free. There's no fee until you actually get that relationship going. So until you find the freelancer and the job is accepted, that's when the fee happens. So there's really no harm in going to lawclerk.legal, taking that first step, and just getting your feet wet in what does it feel like? What does it look like? Mm-hmm. What do I write? And then seeing what kind of responses you get. Now, you obviously get to vet the person. It's not that somebody accepts the job and now you're married to them.
Right.
So what does that vetting process look like?
Sure. And that is one of the big ways that we're different than a lot of other companies that are kind of in the same space is that the hiring attorney is the person who picks. We don't have some fancy algorithm that's forcing our chosen candidate down your throat. So every freelancer on LawClerk is required to provide their resume, of course, to provide a writing sample. And then they are also reviewed and rated on every single project they complete through the site. So when they complete a motion for a different lawyer, that lawyer is going to review them on our rating scale. They're also going to leave a written review. And so the combination of that resume, writing sample, and then those reviews and ratings makes it really quick and easy for you to review a number of applicants and narrow it down. And you can sort the applicants based on their rating level, based on how many projects they've completed, based on their jurisdiction. We're adding in a few more features to that sort feature as well. But it really is a slick process to be able to narrow it down to your top two or three and go from there.
So this is all, it's really, really cool what you guys do and how far you've come in this process. I think we can probably keep going and there's other questions that I have, but we're running out of time. And people who are listening to this, if you have additional questions, I'm sure that the team over at LawClerk is happy to answer those questions for you. What I would encourage all of our listeners to do is don't wait until you have that need to take this for a spin, because when you're in the heat of the moment, needing help, all of a sudden I need somebody, it suddenly becomes this emergency and then you're going to be really, really hesitant and fearful of trying something new. So my encouragement to you is, if this sounds like something that might be useful in your practice, which practically everybody listening to this should feel that way, I would just find something that in the next few weeks that you want to try to give this a try at, and post it on LawClerk and just get go through the motions, see how it works, see how you have to manage the attorney, see how the interaction of document flow and communication happens, and do it when you're not needing it, so that when you do need it, you're all of that first time stuff is already gone, and you're now a novice at this, and you're able to go and get the person that you need for when you really need it. Kristen, this has been a great conversation, a lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming on. Any parting words of wisdom or any specific promotion or place that you want to send our audience to?
Yeah, well, definitely the website lawclerk.legal, and it is .legal, is the best way for you to get a ton of resources about us. Also, I wanted to give your listeners a special offer code. If they do sign up, use this rebate code on your first project. It's a rebate code, and let's do, I think that it's long enough. Let's do Profit With Law 20. So Profit With Law 20. Spell it all out. And what that will be is we'll send you a $100 rebate when you complete your first project of $300 or more. So $100 off your first project of $300 or more, Profit With Law 20. So I would love to throw that out to everyone who spent this time with us today. Thank you so much for having me on. It's always fun chatting with you about life and about law and business. I always enjoy it. Thank you.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for being so generous with our listeners. Just to confirm, there's no spaces in that, right? It's Profit With Law 20. No spaces is the offer code.
All smushed together.
But offer or not, lawclerk.legal, check it out. I'm serious when I say you're going to thank me later when you do this now, when you don't need it. Take it for a spin. Actually hire somebody. Go through the process. And, you know, find a small project that's just, you know, it's easy. You're not in a rush to get it done, but you do want to start to get your feet wet with how to do this, because there's going to come a time when you're going to need it and you're going to be desperate and you're going to be very, very happy that you've actually gone through and done this and you have it established and you're ready to go. So lawclerk.legal. Kristen, thank you so much for being here. I'm looking forward to the next opportunity that we can connect. And folks on the podcast, we have our show every Tuesday and Thursday. Interviews are on Thursdays, so we'll see you on Tuesday. If you are not yet a subscriber to the show and this is your first time listening, hopefully you really enjoyed the episode and you hit that subscribe button so that you get all of the rest of our good stuff coming your way in your podcast player. And if you have not rated or reviewed the show, we would love to see a rating and review. People, when they check the show out, they look at the ratings and reviews to decide whether to listen or not. So the more of you that put a rating and review, the better off we will be as a community. So thank you so much for joining us. And until next time, focus on growing your practice, focus on your profits, and let's change lives together. That's it for this week's episode of Profit With Law. If you have enjoyed the show, please consider sharing it with at least one person. Imagine how many lives we can change if we each shared this episode. Another way to share the episode is on social media. We appreciate your support and look forward to you joining us again next week.